All right. Well, now please join me in welcoming Michelle, our speaker tonight.
Hi, my name is Michelle, and I am an alcoholic. First of all, I'd like to give all thanks and all my gratefulness to my higher power, who I call God. And I'd like to welcome, there's no newcomers, but I'd like to welcome anybody that's new, and I really hope you hear something tonight that wants to make you keep coming back. My sobriety date is December 1st, 2006. Just first, I guess, a little bit about what happened, what it was like. I started drinking when I was 13. I moved here from Arizona when I was 12. And things were a little different in California than it was in Arizona. Much faster paced here. And I immediately got caught up in a crowd that was already discovering alcohol and drugs. And the girls were quickly discovering boys, and everything was just really fast. I was still playing with dolls when I moved here. And I had a pretty normal childhood. I actually don't really have any excuse to be an alcoholic. I had, both of my parents were married while I was growing up. I had three siblings. I always had a roof over my head, clothes on my back, food on the table. I had a good education. I had a religion. I was born and raised Catholic. So I always believed in God my whole entire life. But I never really actually knew what it was like to have a relationship with a higher power. For me, it was just praying at meals, praying before I went to bed at night. You know, and as I got a little bit older, that was gone. So I certainly believed in God and a heaven and hell, and, you know. But well, I started discovering alcohol, and it was amazing to me, absolutely amazing. You know, I was transforming at that age when I moved here, still playing with dolls, and then meeting these girls that were, I don't know, really cool to me. You know, I felt like I was a geek, and I didn't fit in. And so my first drunk was absolutely amazing. And, you know, from the get-go, I was alcoholic. One was not enough, certainly. And, you know, for me and my girlfriend, it was going to her parents when they weren't home and going through their cupboard. And they loved to entertain. He was in real estate. And they had all types of alcohol in their cupboard. They had a refrigerator in their backyard by the pool, and they had those fun little casks of wine in the refrigerator, and we would actually go in the backyard and open that refrigerator door and stand under the cask and, you know, just open our mouths. And, you know, we went to softball practice drunk, and, you know, it was amazing. The coach never knew, but that's how it started out for me. And at, you know, 13 years old, and you know, I remember the first time I was brought home in a blackout. I left to go to a sock hop that night in my clothes, and it was a rainy night. I wound up rolling around in the gutters, taken to a friend's house. His parents weren't home. They put me in his jeans, his T-shirt, put my clothes in a paper bag, and dropped me off at my parents' front door. You know, my mom's standing there looking at me horrified. And I guess from what I understand, she was asking me where were my clothes. And I'm telling her, well, these are my clothes. And it was just, I was a mess, an absolute mess. I remember nothing about that night. And, you know, that's the way it was for me pretty much all the way through junior high and high school. And my mom had warned me. She said, oh, you know, alcohol's going to lead to worse things. You know, and, you know, it's part of my story, but I did dabble in drugs, and quite a bit. But it was amazing that alcohol was my demon. It was much easier for me to quit using any form of drug than it was for me to give up the love of my life. And, you know, it was mostly weekends, of course, and parties while I was still in school. And when I was 15 years old, I met my ex-husband, who was 22. And my dad wasn't too happy about that. He thought I was 18. And we started a relationship, and my parents weren't going to stop me. My mom actually liked who I actually married, my ex-husband. My dad hated him. He tried to keep me from him, and he couldn't. Easy for me to get alcohol whenever I wanted it. Ended up getting a fake ID. I was able to go into bars. Most of my friends were older. If it wasn't, you know, my ex-husband's age at the time, 22, 23 years old, they were, you know, my sister's about 6, 7 years older than me, and I hung out with a lot of, you know, their friends too. And so I had alcohol whenever I wanted it. So ultimately what happened in my relationship with my ex-husband was he was very controlling, and, you know, I did everything he wanted me to do. I never became an individual. By the time I graduated from high school, 18 years old, I immediately moved in with him. And I was constantly it was just this huge cycle. Every time I turned around, I was trying to do something to make him happy. And, you know, if I knew then what I know now, it certainly would be a different story. But it was what I could wear, what I couldn't wear, who I could see, who I couldn't see, what kind of makeup I could wear, how much I could wear, what parties I could go to, what parties I couldn't go to. You know, it was just very controlling. And this went on for many years. We ended up having 20 years together. And it was a constant fight. I mean, we had good moments, but the majority of the relationship was not healthy. He drank quite a bit, and we drank together a lot. I got pregnant when I was 28, and at that time, I still smoked a little marijuana, but of course drank a lot, smoked cigarettes. April of 93, I completely quit everything. It was just, like, so easy for me. But that whole pregnancy, I thought about alcohol. It was killing me. And, you know, I think now, but I didn't really think then that it was a problem. You know, I just thought it was normal. It was just a normal way of life. That's just what, you know, me and my friends did, and that was just my life. And so I do remember on New Year's Eve, 94, when my ex-husband and I went over to the coast. We went to Monterey for New Year's. And I asked my doctor before I went, would it be okay if I had a glass of champagne? And he said, sure. He said, glass isn't going to hurt you. He said, just make sure you limit it to one. I ended up having had two. And, you know, I wanted more. And I probably would have had more if my husband was not with me at the time. But I stopped and finished up the term, gave birth to my daughter. And after that, I started going into a tailspin. We went through bankruptcy together, and I lost my job. I made an error. I worked for a credit union for 9 years, and I made an error, and they let me go. I was really resentful for a long time. But I missed a lot of work. My daughter was really sick, and I stayed home a lot with her, and, you know, they needed somebody they could rely on. And I didn't think about that then. It was like, how dare they? You know, I gave them 9 years of my life, and I worked hard for them, and how dare they? Well, you know, it was an error, and I was actually a really good employee when I was there, but they needed somebody they could rely on, so it was an excuse. And so I stayed home for about 2 years, and in that time, I was starting to hide bottles. actually. And, you know, he, even though he drank, he knew that I was having a problem and was trying to get me to stop. And, you know, we'd go through these fights, and we'd go through where he'd say, no more alcohol in this house, you know, and he'd go and he'd grab the bottle of VO and he'd pour it down the sink, and, you know, but little did I know, he had one in the garage. I, you know, never knew that, you know, and so, you know, it went on like that for a while. We'd start drinking again, and then, you know, back and forth, and, then in 1998, we left my daughter. She was about 4 years old at this time. We left her with one of my girlfriends who we actually went through Lamaze together, and our daughters were born about 2 weeks apart. So we left her with my girlfriend for the day, and we went over to Monterey. That was our drinking grounds. And, you know, we started out that morning with the ice chest, and I think his was VO. I think I had tequila that day. Didn't eat breakfast, and we drank the whole day. Wound up on Cannery Row that evening, and I think we had an appetizer while we were there. And a friend of ours was a bartender. We had a lot of bartender friends, and so we sat there for quite a while, and decided it was time to go. And by the time it was time to go, my ex is throwing up. He's practically falling down. It was just, I mean, it just like hit him, and we didn't even realize it. And I'm fine. You know, after drinking all day long, I'm fine, and I'm going to drive us home, you know. And he's screaming and yelling at me to get in the car, and, you know, our friend is asking us, don't drive, you know, stay here. He had a sailboat in the bay, and he had a motor home. Those were his homes. And he said, stay in one of them. You know, don't drive home. You know, you're not going to make it home. And I didn't listen, got behind the wheel, got up to Lighthouse. Half a mile down, the lights come on. He's passed out by now, and they pull me over, and I get out, and I start doing the sobriety test. And I'm pretty much walking the straight line. You know, I'm doing the nose touching, and I'm doing pretty darn good, right? So they finally decide, well, maybe we ought to have her blow. So I blew, and I blew a .36. And I remember everything, absolutely everything about the whole night, the whole day, and I blew a .36. And so I went to jail and spent the night in there. You know, it was amazing because when I had to go back to court, you know, I still am not thinking I have a problem. You know, .36, I could have killed someone, and I remember everything, a whole 120 pounds, 5'5", and that's my tolerance to alcohol. You know, when I'm in court, the judge looked at me, you know, I'm making excuses, and she looks at me and she says, ma'am, you should have been dead, let alone passed out in bed at home, you know. And so, you know, I had to do the first offender's course. I had 80 hours of community service. They court ordered me to AA. And I was like, what? I have to go to AA? You know, and I'd only heard about it. See, because for me, growing up, the alcoholic was that drunk laying in the alley or laying in the gutter with the brown paper bag, you know, all mussed up, beard, stubble, the lady with the grocery cart, you know, the nylons all ripped up, looking like Carol Burnett, you know, the cleaning lady. That was alcoholic to me. I have no drug addicts. I have no alcoholics in my family. I'm the chosen one. And so, you know, it was just, like, horrifying to me to think I had to go to AA, and how embarrassing it was for me. You know, I'm not like that. I'm not like them at all. And so I remember going into those rooms in the very beginning. I had to have my case transferred over. I lived in Madera at the time, and I had my case transferred from Monterey County over to Madera. And, you know, I started going to the meetings there, and I remember the fear of going into the rooms, first of all, thinking that, you know, God, I just don't belong here, you know? And then, especially after that first meeting, and I was horrified, they called on me to share. And I was like, you know, what am I supposed to say? And I just start bawling. I mean, I was a sniveling mess. You know, my life is just ruined, and I have this fine, and I have community service, and I just whined and whined and whined, and I just, and these people, they looked at me, like, really listened, you know, they cared, hugged me, after the meeting, wanted me to keep coming back, and I was like, this is really weird, this is really strange. But, you know, I couldn't wait to get in the car to get home and have a drink. You know, so I wasn't comfortable with the meeting itself, but I absolutely loved the people in that room. You know, a couple of them I kind of knew. Madera is a small town, and I kind of knew of them, but I didn't know them very well. And they were just some really nice people. And so there was a couple of different meetings that I went to get my court card finished, and I actually didn't finish it, honestly. I forged a couple of the meetings, and, you know, I was just in total denial, absolute denial. So, you know, it ended up where it just kept getting worse, the marriage, the drinking. You know, then not only was he verbally abusive, but he started pushing me. A couple times he pushed me, and... yeah, that was it. I couldn't live like that anymore. You know, I think I was finally coming to understand that I was never going to make him happy. It's not me. I'm not going to make him happy. He's got to make himself happy. And so I left and moved in with my mother, and we started going through this divorce. So during this divorce was when it started. I was drinking in the mornings. I was drinking at night. I had a bottle under my bed. I had a bottle in the trunk of my car. I had a bottle under the front seat of my car. My drink of choice was VO. Loved VO. I could drink it straight. It was so sweet. And I would pour the VO into a Snapple bottle. You know, it looked like an apple. So people just thought it was apple juice. I could have it in my purse. I could drive down the road and have it. But the thing is that it reached really bad. So I lost probably 3 jobs. You know, I went to work after I left him. And I actually went through court, got custody of my daughter. And then I finally came to a point where I realized that I had totally lost control. I was totally powerless. And I went to my mom and I told her. I said, I can't do this anymore. It was a Friday night. My daughter was with her dad, and we got a pizza. My mom and I spent the evening together. She said, where's your bottle? So I showed her my 20 bottles around the house in my car, and, you know, her mouth just dropped open. She said, I knew that you had a problem, Michelle, but I didn't realize. And this was living under her roof. I was smooth. She had no idea it was that bad. And so... went to bed that night, woke up the next morning, and I was feeling miserable. I didn't know what it was like to detox, you know, so I'm sitting there trying to drink a cup of coffee, and it's shaking. Like, I kid you not, I could not get it up to my mouth. So I told her, I'm going to go back to bed. I don't know what's going on here, but this is not what I like feeling like. So I went back to bed, and I woke up about 2 o'clock, got some pizza, leftover pizza, heated it up. I'm sitting there at the coffee table, sitting on the couch. She's sitting in her chair. My mom is, and I guess I don't remember any of this. I looked over at her, and I just said, Mom, and I went into grandma seizures. I had 3. The first one hit, and I fell and hit the coffee table, bit my tongue, you know, blood, and flapping around like a fish on the ground. And my mom is freaking out. Mind you know, she knows nothing about alcoholism either. So she has no idea what's happening to me. She called 911. After the 3rd seizure, I'm face down and I'm not breathing. And they're telling her on the phone, 911, don't touch her. Let her go through these seizures. She's like, forget you. You know, she grabbed me and shook me. And I guess at that point I took a breath and I started breathing. And, you know, I remember on the way to the hospital that day when I was really coming to, I mean, they were asking me questions like, what year is it? Who's the president? You know, I think I said it was Ford, you know, and this was back in 2000 is when this was. And, but I remember talking with the paramedics, and I remember them looking at me and saying, you know that you can never drink again, right? And I was like, yeah, I guess. I still didn't get it. I mean, I knew right then and there I was still going to drink again. I just knew it. So I went a month and drank again. And so I finally decided I needed to go into rehab. I went into Salvation Army. Back then it was a 6-month program. You know, it's faith-based, but it's also AA. It's a 12-step recovery program. And I went through the whole 6 months. And back then you had to have a sponsor. You had to start working the steps. But they didn't make sure you were through all 12 steps before you got out of the program. And, you know, I learned a little bit while I was in there. I don't want to down rehab at all whatsoever. For me, my personal experience, it kept me sober when I was in there. You know, but when that door opened and I got out of the program, I did not call my sponsor. I did not, well, I went to meetings for a while. But for me, it was like, I don't know, I was really cool at this point, you know. I mean, Salvation Army gave me a job. I was working in a thrift store. And well, this whole time I'm in rehab, you know, it's like I don't have my car. I can't get my nails done. I can't go to Starbucks. You know, I can't do this. I can't go shopping. You know, I can't. And it's like, so I get out of the program, and the first thing I do, it's all materialistic. It's all okay. I get my car back. I got my license, I got a job, I got some money, you know, before I knew it, it was like, you know the term dry drunk? That was me. I stopped going to meetings, I didn't call my sponsor, I stopped going to church. I still believed in God, but I certainly never called on Him for anything, or prayed for anybody else for anything. Total selfishness and self-centeredness. And it was a year and a half after I entered that program. I went in December of 2000, and by February of 2002, I was drunk. Light knuckling it the whole time before I actually took that drink. You know, it was like, and I was miserable. I was absolutely miserable. I had no serenity whatsoever. And I remembered, though, that smell of VO. And I remembered hearing somebody tell me one time how vodka didn't smell. And so I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I can have a drink. I'm really not alcoholic. You know, I was on this pink cloud, even though I was, you know, didn't have any serenity at all. I still felt like, you know, hey, I'm not an alcoholic. And I can have a drink. I'll be okay. And I remember that night and buying that half a pint. That's all I bought, was just a half a pint. Okay, I only had one, okay? It ended up being more than one drink. It was that one bottle. But I drank that whole half pint, and it felt pretty darn good. Woke up the next morning, didn't have a hangover. I wasn't shaken, and nobody knew. Absolutely nobody knew. So I thought, see, I'm fine. I'm totally fine. I'm not an alcoholic. And then I think it was about 3 days later, I thought, I'm going to try that again. Well, I bought a pint. And I only drank the pint. That was it. And nobody knew. I didn't have a hangover, no shaking. I hadn't caused any wreckage. Still had my job. And then it just happened. I couldn't stop. So that vodka was really good in the beginning. I was still being able to, even though I was drinking still in the morning and at night again, the vodka I was now pouring in like Aquafina water bottles, so people still didn't know. But for me, I drank so much that it was just coming out of my pores. And one of the employees smelled it on me. And, you know, I'm working in this thrift store around other recovering alcoholics and addicts. And I remember coming in, counting my cash drawer that morning, and everything was a blur. You know, it was starting already where everything was just a blur. And, you know, there was whispering. There were some employees standing off over here and a couple more over here, and they were whispering, and one of them said something. And this guy, who kind of had a crush on me, he was a little slow, but he was sticking up for me. He told him, "Oh, no, that's just her perfume." And I remember the trailer guy, it was cute. He was just adorable. And the trailer guy, whose wife was the manager of the store, said, "Yeah, what is it, O'Day Seagram 7 or what?" You know, and they let me go. You know, and you would think that would be another bottom for me. No, it wasn't. And so, you know, I tried another rehabilitation program. It's called Teen Challenge. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of it. It starts out women's programs in Bakersfield, men's in Shafter. It's not an AA, 12-step-based program. It's all faith-based. As a matter of fact, I tried to take my big book and my 12x12 into the program with me. Not that I read it or anything, but tried to take it in with me, and they wouldn't even let me take it in with me. And so, you know, I went through a year of this, and again, it kept me sober. One thing I will say about Teen Challenge is that it got me closer to my higher power, and that's absolutely something that I needed, because I had nothing inside. I had nothing inside at all. At this point, I had lost my daughter. She was in my ex-husband's custody. My mom had kicked me out of her house. My brother had kicked me out of his house. You know, I had nothing. I could look in the mirror and my eyes were just totally blank. There was no shine, no sparkle, nothing at all. And I wanted to die. You know, what I was going to do, because I have a higher power that I call God. I know if I kill myself, I feel like that I'll never go to heaven. So for me, being a wimp, I thought, well, I'll just drink myself to death. And I didn't eat. I ended up being so sucked up. I weighed about 110 pounds, you know, 5'5", and I was riding a mountain bike. This was before I went into Teen Challenge, but I was riding a mountain bike at, I think I blew a .24 then. I endowed, took the impact on my chin on the asphalt, about 12 stitches to my chin. I told you displaced and fractured my chin. I mean, it was off over here when I looked in the mirror, and underneath looks like hamburger meat. And is that a bottom? Hell no, that's not a bottom, you know. And I didn't even feel it. But yet, you know, I got up, picked the bike up, and I walked the bike back to the house, you know, and I remember everything, you know, still not a bottom. So I thought I would give Teen Challenge a shot, and, you know, it was a good thing. It really was. When I got out of Teen Challenge, I moved in with my mom. At that point, I stayed sober a month, and I was drinking. Got a job working for a mortgage company. Really good job, actually, making the most I've ever made at any job I'd ever been in. Lost that one. They found me passed out in the bathroom. Yeah, actually, when one of the employees walked into the bathroom, she found me, she thought I was dead. So that was a little embarrassing, too. And, you know, the boss was absolutely great. You know, I haven't found him. I still owe him an amends. You know, what I hope was my bottom, everybody's is different, was, you know, I got a job at a credit union after that. I thought I'd give a credit union a shot again. And God's really blessed me with jobs, really. And I worked there for about 7 months, and I wound up on my way home from work one night after I'd been on a roll for about 3 days. I was on 41 in Fresno, heading home. I lived just outside of Fresno. And it was about, it was November 30th of 2006, and it was about 5:30, so it was like bumper to bumper, all three lanes, a lot of traffic, and I rear-ended a couple in an SUV. And I know that this was a total God thing. I absolutely know this in my heart, because they were not hurt. I was not hurt. I was arrested. Apparently after the fact, they did scream whiplash or something. You know, I guess I heard that my insurance company paid out about $15,000, so thank God it wasn't anything serious. And I went to jail that night, and I was getting better, though. I blew a .24 on that one. And got out the next morning. My mom was out of town. I was living with her. My brother and my sister picked me up, and they took me home. Called my employer. It was a Friday. I knew if I went into work, they would smell me. I knew. I was surprised they didn't smell me before that, and I knew I would lose another job. So I called my boss, and I told her that I couldn't make it in. I told her I was in an accident the night before, that I was okay, everybody was okay, but I had to take care of my car, and I was sore. I got down on my knees that morning, and I told God, you know, I can't do this anymore. That self will run riot. And, you know, I'd heard a lot about God's will in this program, but I never wanted to believe in a person that I couldn't see, I couldn't feel, I couldn't talk to. I mean, I can, but, you know, when you don't hear somebody talk back, you know, how can there be a will there? And so I told him, I said, you know, your will, not mine, be done. And I need help. And the next day, my sister gave me the phone number of a woman. She said, you know, my girlfriend works with this lady. She's in Alcoholics Anonymous. She's got 11 years sober. And call her. You need to call her. And so I did. And let me tell you, it's been, ever since that phone call, it has been a hell of a ride. This lady lived way out on Ashland 99, which is, I'm going to tell you, probably a good 7, 8, 9 miles from any of the meetings that we went to, from my house. She worked in downtown Fresno. She would pick me up twice a week, sometimes more when there were speaker meetings or if there was some special function going on. But she would pick me up twice a week and get me to meetings. And she taught me about the meeting before the meeting. I mean, that ride in the car. There was another lady who was very new in sobriety and in the program. The three of us, they called us the Three Musketeers for the longest time. And we had this meeting before the meeting, and then we'd go to the meeting, and then afterwards we would stand out in the parking lot and have the meeting there, or we would go to Starbucks or someplace and have coffee. You know, she taught me about commitment. She told me about these commitment meetings. She goes, Michelle, I've got 3 commitment meetings a week. She goes, I go to one on Tuesday night, I go to one on Thursday night, and then I have a big book study. She said, that keeps my nose in that beautiful big blue book. She said, because sometimes I get lazy and I get tired and I don't pick it up. On Saturday morning, and it was a nice little breakfast meeting, which is in a bar. It's kind of funny. It's a nice little location, but, you know, it keeps her in the big book. And she took me to a conference. I don't know if any of you know, my mind's going to go blank. You know who I'm talking about. Wayne B. He had a conference up in Grass Valley, and it was on emotional sobriety. And I hadn't done my 4-step yet. And this guy has got an amazing concept of the steps. And, I mean, it's all big book. But he made this conference so fun, and it made the 4-step not seem so fearful to me. You know, I was already okay with, I like... I don't know if you've heard about trust God, clean house, and help others. So those first 3 steps, I didn't have a problem with. At this point, I totally trusted God because I know that he put that SUV in front of me, and he was telling me this is your chance. You know, but that fear of cleaning house, you know, I was going to have to finally come into grips with my character defects and all those resentments that I had that I didn't think I had any resentment. You know, and this conference was absolutely amazing. So that helped me quite a bit. And then, you know, I was stubborn. I was very stubborn. Because of my relationship with my ex-husband, I became, rebellious towards the end because I was tired of doing something that somebody else wanted me to do all the time. So I'm you know, I'm German, so I'm really stubborn, and I don't like anybody telling me what to do, you know. So it's just nice to hear people share what their experience, strength, and hope is, you know, and what happened to them, and that was attraction to me, you know. And so I didn't know how to have very good relationships with people. You know, I didn't like it when somebody didn't do something I, you know, wanted them to do, or they didn't react the way I wanted them to react, or if, you know, they didn't say something the way I wanted them to say it. You know, I didn't like it, and it would really disturb me. So, you know, I've learned a lot about, you know, we don't have to have control. You know, it's myself. No matter where I go out there in this world, Michelle's going to be. So, you know, I have to learn to conform to people, places, and things, you know, not the other way around. And, you know, that's what this program has showed me. And, you know, I had a lot of trouble that first year of my sobriety because I didn't have a license. You know, even though my DUIs were 8.5 years apart, they grandfathered that first one in. They changed the law from 7 years to 10 years. So they grandfathered that first one in, and I wound up with 2 DUIs. So I was hard suspended for a year. I had no license. And then I that second year, I had a restricted for a whole year. So, you know, I was going to have some problems getting, God forbid me take a bus, you know. I was above that, even in my first year of sobriety. My sponsor told me about a guy she knew in the program who worked downtown Fresno. And it's kind of funny, I lived in a mobile home park just north of the San Joaquin River, right off of 41 in Fresno, and he lived in a mobile home park just south of the river. And he had a Super Bowl Sunday party every year, and he called it a Sober Bowl party. You know, he had a lot of years of sobriety, she said, and they're always really fun. She said, why don't you go with me? And so she said, maybe you can meet him, and maybe he can give you a ride in, you know, at least drop you off at, like, Ashland and 41, and you take the bus the rest of the way to work. And so I went, and she introduced me to him. He's now my fiancé. He has 12 years coming up on November Friday. Yeah, on Friday, November 6th. And, you know, it was kind of amazing because, you know, he has a daughter and he's got a busy schedule. He has to take her to school in the mornings. But he took his time to help me to get to work for about 8 months. And this whole time of us commuting back and forth together was absolutely amazing because I learned a lot from him and his sobriety. He talks a lot about this man that saved his life. And, you know, he talked about when he was detoxing and how sick he was. And he was in this room and he just wanted to die, you know. And, you know, he's praying, just, I want to die, just take me, God, just take me. And this guy who's sitting right next to him, you all probably know, Ray, told him, you know, he's standing there and he's laughing. And Pat turns around and he looks and he's like, what are you laughing at? I don't see anything funny in this room. And Ray looked at him and he said, well, it is, because you are going to live. You are going to want to live. He said, because you're going to do for other people what I'm doing for you right now. And I love that story because that's one alcoholic given back to another, you know. And I love that about this program. It's a we program. And, you know, and I feel like that's what my first sponsor did for me. That's what Pat did for me. You know, I'm learning about relationships, you know, how to communicate. Just everything. My job. I've been on my job now for 3.5 years. And, you know, I remember in my former jobs how, and, you know, forgive me because I'm a woman, but women irritated me. They were catty. You couldn't trust them. You know, they would stab you in the back as soon as, you know, not. they wanted your job, you know, they talked bad about you, and, you know, I don't look at it that way anymore, you know. Life is way too short, and no matter where you go, stuff is going to happen. And, you know, I think that it's amazing, you know, and for myself, too, you know, I was worthless. I was absolutely worthless. I was powerless. I couldn't take care of my daughter. I couldn't take care of myself, you know. And I remember in that first year of sobriety, people starting to talk to me about sponsoring. I was like, me? Sponsor? There's no way. No way on God's green earth. I can't even take care of myself. And Pat, I remember him telling me, he said, you know what, Michelle? He goes, anybody can sponsor. You know, it's all about experience, strength, and hope. And all you need is to stay one step ahead of that person. And you can, you know, help them. And I found, you know what, it is true. It is all about experience. You know, I am sponsoring women today. And, you know, I love it. I absolutely love it. You know, I see different forms of how people sponsor. And, you know, a lot of sponsors are like, you call me, you know, you call me. And these sponsors don't call, you know, their sponsees. And, you know, I pick up the phone. I have relationships with my sponsees. You know, they're my friends. These women are absolutely beautiful. I have so many different, you know, walks of life. And, you know, it's just amazing what this program does for relationships with people. I can actually have a healthy relationship with a man today. We can agree to disagree. I mean, it's not always perfect, don't get me wrong, but I mean, majority of the time, you know, and then, you know, prayer and meditation, absolutely first and foremost every morning is, you know, we hold hands. We pray, we meditate, we read out of inspirational books. You know, it just, you think about that 24 hours ahead, and it's just amazing what that does for me, you know, every day. You know, you sit here, like earlier tonight I was thinking, geez, I saw you guys sitting here, and I was kind of, I spoke before, but I mean, I think this is the biggest speaker meeting I've ever been in, and I was like, you know, almost horrified at first, and then, you know, I prayed about it, and I asked God to take the fear away, of course, and use me as a vessel, you know, that you guys will hear something that hopefully will touch you and want you to keep coming back. You know, I just, it's amazing, absolutely amazing, what this program can do, and, you know, I never thought that I would be where I'm at today. You know, I thought I would die. I'm still going to die an alcoholic. I know that. But hopefully when I die, I have that hope that I'm going to die sober and with some serenity and some peace in my life, not having a lot of wreckage in my life. And, you know, I know that Alcoholics Anonymous is the rest of my life. You know, it's a program that I will never graduate from. I won't ever get a diploma from this program. You know, it will be a part of me for the rest of my life. And I'm very grateful. Thank you so much for letting me share.